Jimmy, Jimmy Crane, Jimmy Crane's a nerd. Jimmy Crane's an improv nerd. Jimmy Crane's a nerd. Oh, Jimmy.
Hey everybody, this is Jimmy Crane, and you are listening to another episode of Improv Nerd, sponsored by the good people at Hotel Lincoln. The next time you find yourself here in the city of Chicago, and you're looking for a cool boutique hotel that's close to everything, it's right around the corner from Second City, it's across the street from the beautiful Lincoln Park Zoo, and it's minutes from Chicago's Loop, it's the official hotel of Improv Nerd, the Hotel Lincoln. And a lot of people ask me, Jimmy, how can I study with you in your award-winning improv classes, The Art of Slow Comedy, here in Chicago? Well, I've got two great opportunities coming up this summer. One is I've got a six-week Fundamentals of Art of Slow Comedy starting June 28th at Stage 773. And then in July, I've got a one-day Art of Slow Comedy intensive on July 6th at Stage 773. You can go to my website for more information on that, and that's jimmycrane.com. We got a great show for you today and a great guest who's got a great story from the IO Chicago, Nnamdi Ngwe. Now, Nnamdi, and we'll get into this in the interview part, he starts out as a world-class soccer player. He ends up in Denver, where he becomes a model, and then he starts improvising, and he teaches and improvises at the Bovine Theater before he moves to Chicago and establishes himself very quickly here at the IO Chicago. He's on teams like Chaos Theory, Three-Pete, and the Deltones. What I love about Nnamdi is he's got a very distinct style of play that's all his own. He's also incredibly humble, as you'll find out in this interview. We talk about a lot of things, about how he uses his sports in his improv, what it's like to be a model in improv, and we talk about race, because Three-Pete is an all African-American team, and we talk about what that means to him. Before we get to the interview with Nnamdi, two quick things. One is our longtime producer, Ben Caprero, is leaving us, and we are sorry to see him go. We will definitely miss him. He's been such an integral part of the Improv Nerd team. He was with us before we even airing any episodes. We used to record before I figured out how to use GarageBand, we used to record the tops and bottoms off a recorder in his car. That was our mobile studio. So he's been with us for such a long time. We wish him luck. We will definitely miss him very much. And as they say in theater, we hope that he breaks a leg in the business of improvisation. Also, really quickly, as you know, either through my Facebook or here on the podcast, my wife and I, Lauren, are trying to have a baby, and so we went to a fertility doctor, and I didn't really know what to expect when I got there. Very quickly, they put us in a room together, and they brought in a nurse, and they said they're going to run tests on Lauren, which I was expecting, and then they said they were going to run a semen analysis on me, which is code for I need to jizz in a cup. And which got me to thinking about my masturbation history. I've been masturbating for, I don't know, a very long time, since I think like fourth or fifth grade. And it just got me a little nostalgic to think about, you know, the places that I've masturbated. Riding my bike in the summer was one I did, and riding in a car, and I feel shame talking about this, but in a car, driving home with two people in the front seat. But when I think about it, I have never done it in a plastic cup, so I am looking forward to that. I think you're really going to enjoy this, the Nnamdi Ngwe interview.
Jimmy's a nerd, he's a nerd, oh yeah. Jimmy's a nerd, he's a nerd.
Who can time this part? Can someone time out?
Sit down, Nnamdi. Okay. I'm sorry. We're a little, it's Mother's Day. A couple people, our regular people aren't here.
Yeah.
You know, no one ever says anything bad about you.
What?
Do you know that? I tried and I tried and I tried, but I nobody said anything bad about you.
You can probably ask a couple more people.
Is there a dark side to Nnamdi?
I haven't. I don't think so. I hope not. I don't.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't drink, so maybe if I
by choice, or just as a kid you decided not to drink?
No, by choice. I played soccer most of my life, and so I wanted to be have my body right and tight for the field, and so I didn't drink or do drugs or anything like that. But don't get me wrong. I mean, I like to party. I like to go out and have a good time, etc. But no, I just never started drinking.
But so you didn't have a problem with it. It was just.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
But people do think it's odd when I say I don't drink.
Right.
So I was like, why? What's wrong? Religious? Or what happened? What happened is one too. But no, I just never.
I haven't drank for a long time, and I got to tell you something. I enjoy parties and stuff much more because you can go longer.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You can party longer.
Yeah.
You know, and the party doesn't mean you have to, you know, stick stuff up your nose or put something in your arm.
Yeah.
As you know, Nambi, I don't have to tell you that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you dance, though?
I like to dance. I dance. I love dancing.
Yeah, that's
are like you a good dance. Dancer?
I mean, I like to think that. Don't laugh. That's not funny. I like to think I'm a good dancer. I started taking a hip-hop dance class. My man Will Gill is a choreographer. And he teaches his dance, and it's the best. It's the best, dudes. Take a hip-hop class.
How has it helped you with your performing and improv?
Oh, it's helped tremendous. It's just another thing to just feel a bit more confident about, just being in your body and moving and doing something that is scary. Most people don't dance because they feel like they look silly in front of friends or strangers. But, dudes, those friends and strangers will admire you for dancing freely out in public, or they'll probably be jealous. They'll be like, I want that too. I want to enjoy. It's super, super duper fun. Just dance, dudes. Dance.
If you get anything out of this episode from Nambi, dance.
Yep, that's the one.
Okay, let's start. So, you're African, right?
That's where my parents are from.
Your parents are from Africa, but you grew up in England, or they were from England?
No, we were born in England, then we moved here.
And you moved to Houston?
Yeah.
And what was that like? Here you are, your parents are African, you're from England, you had a slight accent, or I would imagine an accent, and you're in Houston, Texas.
Yeah.
What was that like?
It was definitely a culture shock, because at first, I didn't want to, when I was a young boy, young warthog, and I didn't want to leave because all my friends were there. Little boys playing soccer, football, over there, and so when initially when we found out that we're moving to the States, I was like, oh man, I gotta run away. I didn't.
Where were you gonna run away to?
I didn't think that far, man.
Okay.
I just had that thought, and then I was like, oh, I'm gonna. Watched Top of the Pops pop show, so I didn't came over here, went to dove right in, and it was around.
What's around, dove right in?
Just jumped into to school and started playing soccer and things like that.
And did that? How I mean, because you were a great soccer player. Did you have a hard time adjusting because of the culture? Or because soccer was like, oh, he's a great soccer player, so.
Well, soccer's not like the cool sport.
Okay.
Here. So, it did help in making, help me and my brother make friends. My brother, I have a twin brother, but it helped us make friends, certainly, yeah. But it was still a culture shock with a certain lingo, certain, ways of communicating with each other, because we didn't have much over in England, not much at all. We were in a rough neighborhood, a lot tougher than anything I've seen here. I think I guess I haven't been to the real bad parts. So.
When you say it was rough in England, what, give me an example.
Rough. So the neighbors were in and out of jail all the time. One of them ended up just staying there for murder or something. There was a man who I think he had some kind of mental problems. You would see him saunter, I guess you would say. He sauntered up and down the street, and then he would scare the children by like yelling at them or something, and then keep going. One day I looked out my window and saw this man saunter up to the kids as they were playing, and he just pulled down his sweatpants, waved his willy around, pulled up his pants again, and then kept on going. Weird, man. And I known people that have been stabbed and stuff. Mm-hmm. There's not much gunplay mm-hmm. over there, so she gets stabbed, which is a lot more intimate.
Right. We're not as intimate when it comes to killing in this country.
No, that would be.
You got to get really close physically to hurt people.
Eye contact, and then
right,
I'm going to stab you.
Yeah. So you come over here, right. And then you're really good at soccer. You're so good at soccer that you get an MVP. You're given the MVP on your college team.
Well, that was nice. I had nice teammates. They were and coaches and everything.
So you're saying you didn't deserve it?
Yeah, no, I was terrible. Okay. No, I think I don't know. I have a tough time feeling like I'm bragging about things. I really don't ever like to sound like I'm bragging, like, dudes, I'm the man.
Where did that come from?
I don't know. I've just always been that way. I like to work hard to get mm-hmm. something, and I appreciate if I'm given some kind of accolade, individual award, or somebody says something nice about me. But I wouldn't tell you in front of people or behind closed doors that I'm the man, I'm that dude. I'll try hard at whatever I'm supposed to do.
But you'll never admit you're good at something.
Admit? I don't know about admit. I've never bragged. I don't want to brag. I don't sound braggy.
Okay. Because I'm not getting bragging at all from you.
Yeah.
I'm getting almost the opposite. Like. Yeah. I'm gonna hide what I have.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Okay, that's what you're going for because it's definitely working.
But the MVP thing, yeah. I was one of the captains on the mm-hmm. soccer team, which is the fellow teammates elect mm-hmm. Two captains, and myself and my good friend Tony McManus were elected as captains, and I think that's. Because of the way we carried ourselves, and
it had nothing to do with your soccer ability at all.
and I was a fantastic soccer player.
Now, how hard was that for you to say that? I know you were kind of kidding about that, but honestly, you're smiling, you're beaming.
Yeah, it wasn't hard for me to say because I said it with a bit of goof. Mm-hmm. But I did well in soccer. I was able to travel and. Mm-hmm. And get to see a lot of great places. Get mm-hmm. to get to make great, great friends mm-hmm. and compete against great, great people.
Now, as I research you are not the typical profile of a guest we've had. When we go to their how they grew up in their high school and stuff like that, no one was like a really good athlete. No mm-hmm. one was. No one was like a really good student. No one didn't drink. No one comes from the modeling world and does improv.
Right.
So, how did you become a model?
Yeah, I started in my very very first time.
Now, did you ever think you were good looking?
I don't know.
Okay. I'm gonna say that's a yes.
Here's the thing with that. My twin brother, like, all the ladies would be like, oh, he's so cute. Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh. Mm-hmm. And then so I'd be like, oh, well, he's the pretty one, which is fine. I didn't feel bad about that. It's my twin. I love him to death. He's the best in the world. Mitch, shout out. but then I can't remember when it was, but then I was like, hang on a second. We're twins, so maybe I look all right. Maybe I'm all right.
And you're identical twins.
We're fraternal.
Okay.
We're fraternal. Okay. So there's a bit of a height difference.
Mm-hmm. Who's taller?
I'm taller.
Okay, so you had that on him.
Yeah, that's what I had. Okay. That's what I got on him. He's okay. Pretty smarter.
Okay. And, but you're funnier.
Well, you haven't met him yet.
Okay.
So modeling, I would go to hang out at a Starbucks in...
this is when you were in Denver, right?
Denver. Okay. Denver, Colorado. I would hang out in a Starbucks, and I would talk with another person that was there all the time, Marianne Hogan. And
you were there just because to use the internet?
Yeah, okay. That free Wi-Fi. Get my free Wi-Fi, gang. It's still there. And she would joke and stuff. She told me about these open casting calls.
Now, at this point, you have no aspirations to be an actor or be a model or any of that?
I always wanted to be in front of a camera, be on a stage in front of people. And I did the odd thing here and there. But as far as doing it to get paid and getting paid to do it professionally, I was like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I'll just kind of live my life, figure it out. So
you're sitting at the Starbucks.
Sitting at the Starbucks with Marianne Hogan. We're having a good old time. She's got coffee. I got hot cocoa. And she told me about this open casting call. So I go and I show up to this agency's open casting call. And
how are you feeling when you're going in there? Do you think it's like a joke, a goof?
No,
you're like, I want to make money at this?
I was like, I want to get signed. I want them to like me. Them to like me.
Now, are you a people pleaser? Do you want people to like you? Because I am a huge people pleaser.
I think maybe a lot of performers, improvisers,
yes,
are, yes, people pleasers.
Yes.
We like the instant reaction from the audience. We like, that's why we're on the stage, man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Hell yeah, I'm a people pleaser.
Okay. I'm not throwing you off, am I?
No,
I'm not getting too deep psychological.
No. If I start crying and cutting the cameras.
Okay.
So I'm with this open casting call. I show up. I put on a tight fitting shirt.
Which you totally are embarrassed about saying, right?
Yeah, man.
Okay. So you show up there in a tight-fitting shirt.
Tight-fitting shirt.
Other people are in the waiting room?
Yeah, other ladies and gents in the waiting room.
Are you checking them out like, oh, this is the competition I have?
No.
You're not that kind of person.
I don't see people as competition.
Oh, how did you... it's hard for me not to, but how did you master that?
Oh. There's like so much out there. I don't know how you can see another person as competition.
There's nothing, man. If it's the presidency of the United States, wait 4 years, you get another shot at it, man. You can do whatever you want. There's no one person that's going to stop you from doing what you want to do.
Okay.
That's for reals, guys. So I was at the agency, and so there's men, women, some kids too, and I show up. I didn't have a resume or a headshot or anything. I just had a picture of me at a bar. I don't know, maybe at a bar or something. So I remember walking in, handing a picture.
Just like a small picture of
small,
you?
Small little
okay,
pic.
Not even
small
like you didn't pic. Blow it up to like headshot size. You're just like...
No, man, that would have been like...
You took it out of your photo album.
I didn't want to do that, okay, dude. Yeah. So I walked in, and then the lady, I remember what she looked like. You know, short hair. And she was not, she was probably having a long day. She didn't look at me much. She kind of looked at my picture, gave me the once up and down. I was like, no, that's it, dude. We didn't talk about nothing. No, she didn't care about me as a person. She just looked at the picture, looked up, and was like, nah, deuces, I'm out of there. Done. All right. So I leave.
How are you feeling at this point?
I was like, I didn't like the way she, the kind of piece of meat, mm-hmm, feeling that I was given. I didn't really like that, but nothing like that. No one person will stop me from doing what I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I wasn't like, I didn't go home and cry and eat ice cream or anything like
no,
that.
No, because you're a model. You can't afford to do that.
Dude, and my twin is super cute. So I left and talked to Marianne again, and I found out about this audition for Harley Davidson show, a Harley Davidson fashion show. So I show up at the audition,
I'm not supposed to be
so
there.
So you crashed the audition.
I crashed the audition.
How'd you find the information out?
A friend that's a model.
Okay.
And here's the thing. He looks just like me. Bald, 6 foot,
right.
Something. Former athlete as well.
Okay. Black or white guy?
Black guy.
Okay, so he's definitely your competition.
Yeah.
But there is no competition that we've learned.
Yeah, but he's my competition, dude.
Right.
Air quotes. So right. I show up at this audition, and the audition involved, the audition was like, had the guys walk.
Mm-hmm.
We walked across the stage. It's like, cool. I've seen America's Next Top Model. So I took the little part that guys should do from that and used it and was like, cool, that's great. So they sent some people home, some more people left. And they said, okay, now this show is going to involve some kind of dance, huh? Dance, fella, dance girl. So who wants to get up and dance? And I'd already started improvising by then.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, oh, I'll do it. I was in a room full of stiff model dudes.
Right.
Yeah, hey, bro, that kind of guy. None of them wanted to get up, so I got up. And I, you guys, they turned on one of my jams at the time. So I just started getting it. I started dancing, working up a sweat. I was wearing that same tight shirt from before. And then I got the gig. And then right after I got the gig, on my way out, they were like, oh, what agency are you with? I wrote down the agency that I got denied by. That same lady that turned me down earlier was the one that called me on the phone and was like, who are you? What's your deal? We're going to sign you.
How did you have the smarts to do that? Write down her name?
That's the only one that came to mind at the time. That's the only one that came to mind. So I wrote down her name and then I got signed by that. The same people that denied me.
So improv really got you that job?
Yes.
In a lot of ways. Because at that time, you're in Denver, right? And you're studying with Bovine?
Yeah, studying at the Bovine. Started performing there. My man, Eric Ferrone,
mm-hmm.
Over there. It was great. It's a blast. I love that place. Every time I go back there.
Do you remember a time, you know, because when you first started at the Bovine where you're like, okay, it clicked for me.
Mm-hmm.
A class or
Yeah. It was definitely in class. I think it was like, it's probably, you know, like level 3, level 4. It's the same format here, mm-hmm. as far as, you know, 8-week classes. And then you move on and you focus on another certain aspect. It was probably in 3 or 4. I can't remember the exact day, but it was during a class. We were going over, you know, just going over things we'd learned before. And I remember during part of the scene that I kind of did a move without worrying about it, without thinking, without trying to pre-plan mm-hmm. everything.
Because you had pre-planned before?
I tried to pre-plan stuff, and it never, ever worked.
I did too.
I remember trying. I remember there was even, I wasted $8 in this. You guys, there was a book that was like, it was about improv, and in the second half of that book, it had initiations for scenes. Like it had,
like to memorize them?
Yeah.
Okay.
What? This is a book.
Right.
And it would be like, oh, hey, Mom, there's nothing in the fridge.
Mm-hmm.
And I would be like, okay, I remember that. Go, and I would try to take it to a show, and I totally, out the window, and I would just have a good old time on stage. So it took me a little bit to actually realize I did waste money on that book, and I should have just like gone with my gut, gone with my heart, and had a good old time.
But, so you're in this class and you make a move and you're like,
and then I realize, oh yeah, this feels good on me. I like that. And I dove in big time. As far as I was always at shows, I went to the class all the time, and then I started performing when I was still in classes, which was nice with them. I auditioned for On the Spot, which is a short form
mm-hmm.
Show that they have out there, and made it, and that was kind of like a validation kind of thing, and And yeah, man.
And then you started teaching.
Yeah, started teaching. Yeah.
And then you decide to come to Chicago. Mm-hmm. But you're not sure, because you've been there for like 3.5 years mm-hmm. in Denver. Mm-hmm. Either go to L.A. Mm-hmm. or go to Chicago. Mm-hmm. How do you make the decision?
I knew a couple peeps out here.
Anyone we know?
Yeah, Mo Welch. Maybe in Jet Evelith.
Jet Evelith.
I'm drunk. Yeah, she was another one. So I was like, I'll go to Chicago. I didn't go like it. I'd been to both places before, mm-hmm. but I didn't go to either when I was making the decision. It mm-hmm. really was just, well, I'm going to pack up my things and go to Chicago. And so I came here and didn't look back.
And then you've been here now 3.5 years. Is that right? Almost 4 years?
Yeah, 2010.
And I mean, in a very short period of time, you're on Chaos Theory at I.O., which is like people that have been doing it for 15, mm-hmm. 10. I mean, they've been around for a long time, mm-hmm. really established people. The Deltones, mm-hmm. which is probably one of the top musical improv groups. And then Three-Pete, which is, can you describe Three-Pete for us?
Yeah, Three-Pete. This kind of goes back to the competition thing, mm-hmm. too, because Three-Pete is all us, I'll say, all black people.
Now you stuck your tongue out, you're like a black people, and you rolled your eyes a little. Why?
Because there's this big talk about, you know, race and diversity and
right
and improv. But when I would go to auditions, I would see the same people all the time, mm-hmm. and there was the feeling of just for me, there was the feeling of all of these, you know, the same people are being put up against each other, mm-hmm. For one role in mm-hmm. In whatever in the production may be. So so with Three-Pete, it is myself, Nate Sherman, Gary Richardson, Patrick Roland, John Thibodeau, and Brianna Baker. The fellas on the team, we would always be at the same auditions, mm-hmm. if it's for stage or commercial or something mm-hmm. like that, and anybody that knows us knows that we are very different types, very different right. people. But there's typically the one black guy role, and doesn't matter what type you are, you're going for that same spot. Mm-hmm. So I was like, hey man, no, let's do that. We're all doing pretty well in this world. Let's make something together, and we got together and now we're playing at the I.O. Theater every week.
What do you think about? Because when I started, there was no diversity in mm-hmm. improv. This mm-hmm. is back in the late 80s. Mm-hmm. Where do you think it is today?
Probably a little bit better. It's not. I mean, we are still. It is still the, you know, team of team of white guys, maybe one or two white girls on it, and then there'll be the token diversity person. Not on every team, mm-hmm. But if there is a diverse. The different looking person on there, it would probably be a black guy or something other woman.
So what could make improv more diverse?
Good examples for people that aren't doing it, mm-hmm. for younger people, for to see because that's how everybody gets into it, improv. I started digging improv when I saw Whose Line Is It Anyway? Mm-hmm. Wayne Brady. I was like, that dude's all right. Mm-hmm. But
Wayne Brady, if you think about it, there was only one black guy in that whole show, right?
On the UK version and the right. US version, he was the one guy. Mm-hmm. He didn't choose to be any kind of role model, I don't think.
Mm-hmm. But you looked up to him as a role model?
We can say that for sure. Because I was like, I dug what he did. Mm-hmm. He did it with confidence, and he did it well. And so, hopefully, with three people, we can do the same for others. We started going out and doing workshops with the high schoolers and things like that to hopefully influence a bit of change in this world.
You've always been a guy. The other thing when I did the research is you've always been somebody who goes and supports and goes and sees people's show. And now, I mean, 3Beat, now you're taking it out. I would imagine you're working with black performers, right? Mm-hmm. People that hopefully aspire to you to do stuff that you've done. Where did you get that? Was that from your parents?
I don't know. I don't know where exactly that came from. I see a lot of value in people that are in certain positions to give back.
People that encourage. You think don't have the same advantages.
Not necessarily the same advantages, but just people that are in certain positions, like when you finally meet. Someone you look up to, whether they are an actor or a musician or painter or whatever they are, if you meet them and they are an asshole, you're gonna lose a lot of respect for them.
Mm-hmm.
It is that way in improv. There are, you know, people don't, again, they don't choose to be seen as a role model or idolized by students or audience members, but man, they do a lot of great stuff on the stage. So I still think that a lot of people that I get to perform with and see on a regular basis are just the bee's knees, and maybe some people think highly of me, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to be a good example if they meet me to them. You know, I want them to feel like, oh, he's all right. Maybe I can do that too, if he's just a regular person, like I am. I don't know. Does that make sense?
Total sense.
Okay.
We're going to improvise now.
Are we?
Yes, we're going to improvise.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to take a suggestion. What would you like for a suggestion?
I never want to...
You never want to what?
Get to make it too hard. I just want to just hear a word, and then we're going to use that and make some magic.
So when you say you don't want it too hard of a suggestion, are there hard suggestions?
When people are like, oh, I've got a box that I found from under my bed. Inside this box is something, but it's purple, but it's only 6 inches in diameter. No, let's just keep it simple. Just give me a word that's on your mind, and we're going to party.
Okay, can we have a word that's on your mind?
Pizza.
Pizza.
I love pizza.
Okay, so pizza. So you hear the word pizza, what goes on in your head in terms of using that suggestion?
I think of the easiest thing, which is just eating pizza.
Okay.
But then I scrap that, and then I think of what pizza could you know, how it's used in the slang. So pizza face, mm-hmm, comes to mind. Pimples.
Mm-hmm.
Then I think of high school, and here we are.
Okay, great. Let's do it.
Yeah.
Mr. Carlson.
What?
What are you doing here at the locker?
I was just going to get my shorts out, go for a run before school started.
Hmm. Well, I was going to do the same.
Do you have to, Rick? I mean, people are going to think we're like best buds or something.
What's wrong with that? I'm not very well liked. You're popular.
Yeah, that's exactly. Are you going to kind of take away from my reputation that I've built here? And I care about what these kids think about me.
Well, I do too. I do too. I got some cigarettes, because that's what the kids are smoking. Some of these e-cigarettes.
No.
What?
No.
What?
I don't want to hear this kind of thing. This is getting me in trouble.
But what?
If you're giving the kids the cigarettes...
Well, I want to be liked.
Yeah, see, man, you got to be cool if you want to be liked. You know what I'm saying?
No, I don't know what you're saying, Calvin. I've been here 12 years, and I'm not liked.
Look, man, you want to be cool. You got to kind of just unbutton the top button of your shirt, you know? You got to...
Done.
That's not the only thing that's going to make you cool. It's a lot more the way you carry yourself, the way you walk around a room, the way you walk around a room. There's a lot that goes into it, you know?
Just like that?
Just like that, a little okay. Dip. It looks like you're lunging. It looks like you're lunging.
That's good, isn't it?
No, lunging? It's not good.
Okay.
It's not good.
You're cool. I'll listen to what you have to say.
Ask you a question, Rick.
Sure, Calvin. Go right ahead.
You ever listen to what the kids listen to, like music-wise?
I tell them to shut it off in class.
Dude, no.
It's loud. It's disrupting the class. I'm trying to teach math.
Yeah, kids listen to music because, I mean, that relaxes them. It makes them...
No, Kelvin. They don't listen to music to relax themselves. They're using it to get under our skin. It's the difference between me and you.
Rick. I walk in the room. Ladies see me. They're like, ooh, you want to feel me? That's a rap lyric. How does that make you feel?
Scared.
What?
That makes me scared.
That, coming from me, that made you
yes, sad? Yes. Where's that going to lead? These kids that are doing that? Calvin, we don't know. They may be doing heroin. They may be doing crack. Rap doesn't lead to good things.
Everybody put your hands in the air. Wave them around like you just don't care. It's a party. Yes, yes, y'all. I see you shaking your tail. That's another rap.
Well, I like that rap.
There.
Yeah. I can get down with that.
What was the difference between the two?
Exactly.
There wasn't no difference between the
two. Well, the other one was inviting, Calvin. It was, let's all dance. The other one was scary. We are a good example. We people look up to us, Calvin.
Yeah.
What would happen if you went down the hall today and you sang that? Is it rap? Is that what they call it?
Yeah, that's what they call
okay,
it.
Okay, Calvin. And you rapped your way up to your classroom. What kind of example would that be setting for the kids?
I think most kids will start a little line behind me and I'll feel like the Pied Piper of Hamlet.
Well, then what would they say behind your back when it was all said and done? Maybe they were doing it as a joke, like they did to me last week.
Yeah, I heard about that.
Wasn't pretty? Still a little embarrassed, right? You think putting tacks on someone's chair would be...
Hilarious?
Yeah. I guess 40 were really funny. But 100 was even funnier.
Sorry, I should have warned you.
You knew?
I'm Facebook friends with most of the kids here. And they all posted about it. It's a secret group we're all in. It's not, on Facebook, I can't use my real name because...
Kelvin, we're not supposed to be on Facebook.
I'm not on Facebook. Esteban is on Facebook. So that doesn't get me in trouble.
You could get in a lot of trouble, Calvin.
No, only if somebody says... Right?
Well, maybe I'd say something.
Why would you do that?
Because I'm jealous of you. I'd say something.
Rick.
Yes.
Rick.
Calvin.
Rick.
Calvin.
No! Come on, bro.
Well, make me popular. And I won't tell. I've got the makings of being really popular. Sometimes I say to my wife, I should be more popular than Kelvin.
You gotta get over me. You shouldn't say anything like that to your wife. It's gonna like make you super curious about me. And at some next party that we all have when we invite significant others over, like, I wanna see why he's so popular, he's so cool. He's gonna come over and have a punch or two. He's like twirl her hair while she's talking to me. And I'll notice this. Biting. Then I'll say, I'll have to run to the broom closet to get a napkin. She'll say, yeah, I should come with you.
And then you'll hook up with her. Is that it?
Yes. So, you shouldn't be tense talking about me behind my back. If you want, I can help you set up a Facebook profile.
Please, please. I'm desperate. Help me set up this Facebook profile under an alias.
All right. It's gonna be a Latin name, though.
Cool. That's cool. Joseph.
Joseph?
Yeah. Joseph.
Why not like trim it down to Joe or J Money?
J Money. I like J Money. J Money.
Yeah, J Money is a lot better than Joe. Why Joseph?
I don't know. You put me on the spot. I teach math. I don't teach Latin.
Okay.
I wasn't good in languages.
Fair. That's
okay,
fair.
Okay, Facebook profile.
Facebook profile.
And then we'll just... We're cool then, right?
Well, you know, you have to update your status from now
on. How does that work?
Oh, well, that's... You just kind of just... Just spout things that are on your mind.
Like, I just masturbated?
No.
No. Okay. I just went to the grocery store and I waited in line for 10 minutes.
Okay, so you went from one end of the spectrum to the very far end.
Okay.
Like, trying to find a happy medium.
Okay, happy medium. Okay, happy medium. Is it just me or does Glee seem like it's jumped the shark? Better?
Oh, yep. That
okay. I felt that. Felt that one.
Yeah. I felt that one too.
Okay.
Yeah. You're getting that. That should start some kind of debate.
Okay.
Back in 2009, that would have started a real good debate.
Okay. What you're telling me is I'm not hip. I'm not contemporary.
Yeah. You're not current.
Okay. So nothing about Sopranos, right? Okay. Okay. I'm cool.
Sopranos.
Yeah. Well, I kind of binge watch them. I just started to get. Okay,
No, you know, I mean, nowadays kids are watching The Greatest Loser. So all your posts have got to be about The Greatest Loser. It's a show on CNBC.
Okay, and what's it about?
Well, they take all the people that were on The Biggest Loser.
Okay.
And they have to compete against each other to lose even more weight.
So anything about weight loss, I post.
Hell yeah.
Okay. So if I say, you know, I just had a Snickers and I found out it has 14 grams of fat, what do you think for Facebook posts?
That's close. You got to throw in a hashtag, though.
Okay. Hashtag. What?
Oh, jeez.
So what did you feel about that?
It was a fun time. It zipped by. I never feel bad about a show or a scene that I do. I guess if I think back over a set or a piece that I was part of, I kind of rate it on fun.
Okay, so how much fun did you have?
I had a good time.
Okay.
Yeah. It was fun. I'll feel good about that.
Okay.
Yeah.
What did I feel? I felt like my character kept changing, mm-hmm. and I was like a moving target. And then there was other things, like the thing when you said about, you know, my wife, that beautiful monologue you had about my wife and stuff like that. I felt like I could have there could have been more emotion to that. I felt like, okay, let's move on to something else. Mm-hmm. What did you feel about that?
That definitely happened. I, you know, if we stayed in like for if we stayed in the wife moment for a bit more and kind of dug a little deeper, explored that, your character could have probably got a little fired up.
Yes,
and we would have ended up somewhere else.
Right.
It's good when we hit those three-peat, for example. One of the teams I play with really likes to whenever we find a little nugget like that, a little gold nugget.
Right.
We really pounce on that and explore that and find.
So could we have pounced it? I just get really angry at you.
No, you wouldn't necessarily have to get really angry at me right away. But you could have maybe you could have said revealed more things that you've been telling your wife, and then we could have found something there. Or
what if it had been something like you do it and I say something like, "Well, fuck, she's really attracted to you."
Mm-hmm. Like. Do you have a picture of her or anything?
Yeah, here, it's on my...
Damn!
We haven't had sex in 4 years.
She must be really ready to go.
Kelvin, she blames me.
Like for the no sex thing?
Yeah, she says she's not attracted to me anymore.
See your point.
I mean, you think it's my fault?
Well, I mean, just judging from the way you try really hard with the kiddos, you probably try a little too hard with the missus, and she's just not into it.
What?
No, silly.
No, what? I need help.
Know.
What?
Don't
what?
Twist
what?
My arm.
No, what is it? Calvin, please. I'm desperate.
Maybe I could, you know, talk to her, take her out for a meal, just figure out what's going on.
You do that for me? Because we haven't gone out in, like, she hasn't gone out on a nice date in a long time.
What do you do, man?
I work. I'm the head of the math department.
Nobody will be impressed by that last statement.
Kelvin, would you take my wife out?
Yes, Rick, I will. I'll take her out. But only because she looks super cute in that iPhone picture.
If something happens between you, I'm cool with it.
I really appreciate that.
Okay, so what did we discover in that beat? That we discovered more of the character.
I think we gave right there. We gave the audience something that, you know, it became a bit more engaging.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's going to sit in the audience and say, "Oh man, I really wish you guys talked about this or that."
Right.
But I think it became more a bit more interesting because we just did that scene sitting down.
Right.
But it felt I felt that they were definitely a little more interested in what's going on and we're hanging on to every moment, every word. Just
right.
And we could let parts of that just sit a little bit before responding.
Mm-hmm.
So things like that when you dig a little deeper into a moment like that or a piece of information like that makes a scene, makes a piece better.
The thing that I found amazing, and I felt like I was rushing a little, I work slow, but you work like incredibly slow, you know? How have you been able, because I always can move really fast, and you have to, there's pressure, you know, I perform there, and there's pressure to get laughs. How do you make that balance over there?
That is tricky because I was I've been told a number of times that I
just I think my the, my appearance, my size, and everything makes me my attention. I draw attention. So I think I use that that little bit of information and say to myself, well, they're here. They're gonna watch. They're gonna enjoy regardless. So I can take the tiny little extra time and let it sink in a bit, and then respond. Because I like to listen to every single word that's said by my fellow performer or performers before responding. Because a lot of people don't do that. A lot of people start responding before the sentence is finished. A lot of people assume they know what's coming at the end of the. Yeah, they're one man. So I like to. I why not wait to the very end of what's being said before responding? That helps.
That's really super brave in improv, I think, today. Okay, we're going to take some questions from the audience. So if you got questions of what we just did, or great. Yes?
So I have the privilege of getting to watch you all the time. And one thing that I notice is that you have, like many improvisers, you have like a bag of characters that I feel like I see like a similar energy come out, like you've got like a pack of them. And like, I don't know if you're aware of that or if you have crafted that. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to hear like what your process is and like refining those.
Interesting.
So like you experience Nambi having like a, like he's got like.
He's got similar energies.
That he pulls out when he does
does
his show.
He's got like a cool guy. He's got like the teacher boss character.
What did we see? What did we just see in this scene?
Well, and he also blends them too.
Okay.
So I saw like the kind of cool like big cat.
Cool big cat character. Okay. Was there a blend there? Or just the.
There's something in the, you do this thing where you use the silences a lot that you were just talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes it's just like the using the silences character that just like kind of sits in it. There's a little bit of that guy in there.
So you have a character that just sits in the silence? How does that character work?
I know what she means. I do super enjoy silent, awkward silences. One of the things I do when I host shows, which is not very much because I do this, but I you know, I come out, clap, yay, let's party, yeah, we're gonna have a good old time, right? Right, and then I say, you know, the bathroom's over there, the bar, et cetera, is over there, and this is the part of the show where we sit in awkward silence. You guys ready for the first team? So, I don't know. I love silences, man. Because, you know, I don't know. I feel confident with that kind of thing. Because, if you're confident on stage, it makes the audience a lot more confident. I've heard a lot of people say they don't like going to improv because... because they get nervous for the people that are on stage. No, dude, they choose to be on stage. Let them try it and fail. So with this, my characters per se, they come from just trying a certain thing, a certain voice, a certain stature,
physicality.
They come from that. Or certain pieces, certain sketch shows or et cetera that I may have been part of, and then getting a certain response, reaction to them, and be like, all right, I'll try and remember this feeling and do it again. And hopefully they'll come out at appropriate times. And it just kind of builds over time.
How many characters do you think you have?
No idea.
No idea?
No idea.
Okay.
Yeah. I've heard people talk about other people having characters... so I know I've never been asked that question, but I know there's that for me as well. But I don't know how many I have. I do try to, try to have a good old time up there. I don't know.
Great. Another question. Right here.
So when you guys do three-peat, it's really kind of thrilling to watch because you're zigzagging through suggestions, and you guys are really good at latching on to the weird stuff that each person does. How did you decide that that's what you wanted to do? Like, how did you decide on that form, I guess?
How'd you come up with the idea for 3-peat, that form?
Yeah, when we first started performing as a group, before each show, we'd be like, "What do you want to try today?" as an opening, to get everything going, and we this structure we do now, where where one person steps forward, takes a suggestion, and tells an honest monologue. I like that honesty part. That's the whole being confident in front of an audience, being a bit more relatable, telling something that's truthful. So the audience is like, "Yeah, that person's all right." And then on the sidelines, we ask a couple questions to dig a little deeper. And that doing that too, that shows the audience is like, "Oh, they're friends too." Because we get along the way these questions are asked, the way we interact with each other before we begin our piece, and then from there we use whatever information we've gathered, and do a piece that moves along, and hopefully people enjoy.
Another question, right over here.
What I was going to ask is that having played soccer. Well, being a team sport, improv itself is like a team sport. How did that prepare you for making a transaction from being a soccer team to an improv team?
Yeah, that's great, and that's one.
And
of
that
the
was for the, how soccer helps with improv.
Yeah.
Being on a soccer team.
Yeah. Being that like on a team with a team mentality, because improv itself and soccer, you're basically a team up there, and you were trained to be on a team before that, and now you're on an improv team. So what I'm saying is that just. How did that help you to transition to being on improv team?
Because
I don't play sports.
From soccer to improv. How did that help? And I have to repeat these questions because somebody had said to me on the podcast they are not hearing the questions from the audience.
Okay.
So.
Okay. From soccer to improv, that helped big time, I think. It's probably one of the things that draw me to improv is that you're working with one, two, however many people you're working with other people, and I really like that being part of a working together with somebody to create something, have a goal and reach it. Soccer, no, it's super cool. There's not one particular thing that goes from one to the other, right? Like stretching or something like that. But I think it just helps me as an individual who likes to be part of a team. I did enjoy being a leader on all the teams.
Are you a leader with 3-peat?
I respond to a bunch of emails.
You would not admit to being a leader.
No.
Okay.
No, I think we're all equal. But I do a lot of emailing.
So if you're listening to this podcast, you have to read between the lines. I'm going to say he's a leader. All right, great, right here.
One of the first shows that I saw you in, you were playing yourself in a Deltone show. You were playing Namdi, this big IO performer. As someone who, as you continue to sort of have this persona around you and as you get bigger in the Chicago improv community, do you find yourself playing yourself on stage, or how do you feel about the way that you are perceived by other people in the improv community?
So the question was how people perceive Namdi in the improv community?
Yes, / does he play himself on stage often?
Okay, how are you perceived in the improv community? And then we'll get the second question.
Okay. So how I perceived, you mentioned it earlier. I think people call me nice and stuff.
Right.
They're all wrong. I do all right, I think. Somebody said this to me the other day. It was one of the
because at the Second City IO and Annoyance, they usually have interns that work there, do odd jobs, not necessarily fun jobs, mm-hmm. At the theaters, to help with their classes, etc., and get along. I always like to just stop and say hi to them, see how they're doing, what level they're in, if they're having a good time. If I'm performing, if I'm not performing, I always like to do that. I was never an intern, but I just like saying hi to them. A lot of people just kind of, oh, that's an intern. I'm gonna step over them. Move, dude. Do you know who I am? I'm not that way. So I was stopped one time by an intern, and he told me that that doing that is he's like means a lot to him. Mm-hmm. He thinks it's super nice, and I thought I was just saying hi to other people, but to that person and to others who may not have said the same thing, it means a lot more to them. And so that I care, that I was like, oh, that feels good. That's nice that somebody would say that and make me realize. Because I just think I'm just being Andy.
The other question they asked you was playing yourself, right?
On stage.
Playing yourself on stage. Now, you're smiling. My guess is you're uncomfortable playing yourself on stage.
You're wrong.
Okay.
You're very wrong. I like poking fun at myself. I don't mind that at all. You know, in the Armando and 3-peat, et cetera, we have to do a lot of
monologues.
Honest monologues. Right. I don't mind that at all. I love that. I can, if there's a stage, I will stand on there and do something on it. I don't mind one bit. I think it's fun with Deltones and Chaos Theory, like Rance, Tara, Stacy, Todd, the others. There are a lot of just like good friends. We're actually friends. We go on the road and do shows together. So them making, you know, them putting me into the position to poke fun at myself is fun. I love it.
Your question, do you want to see Namby play more of himself on stage?
I don't mind whatever he chooses to play on stage.
They're like huge fans. They're not gonna whatever Namby, yeah. Whatever he is, I don't care. I don't care. Read the phone book. It's just Namby. But is there...
It's happened in 3-peat as well that I've had to play.
What's the character? What is the exaggerated version of Namby?
Exaggerated version of Namby is I like to go to the clubs and party. I'm a cool guy. Everybody loves me. Hey, you want a hug? which is all super devious. Yeah, that's another thing. That kind of stuff is what I like to do.
Because it's making fun of you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, making fun of me. Yeah. So, yeah.
Okay, so you're in Chicago now. You decided to come here. Two questions before we wrap it up. Mm-hmm. One is, what's next for you? Is it Second City?
I already get to perform, like do stuff with the BISCO over there. So
the business theater, you do corporate shows, mm-hmm. and workshops and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Do you want a stage over there?
This is a yes, I do.
Okay.
I don't mind. That's not my goal.
Okay.
If it happens, it happens. It's great. I kind of looking past Chicago. I don't know when I may end up in another city in LA eventually.
Now, you also talked to me before about being your dream of being an action star.
Yeah, Yeah, man.
You wanted to combine both soccer and comedy.
Yeah.
And that was an action star.
Yeah. I was asked my, you know, my influences.
Yes.
Comedy influences. Mm-hmm. I was like, can I put Arnold Schwarzenegger as one?
Fine with me. Why was he a comedy influence?
Because he's just an influence in general, man. Because for me, because I grew up digging the action movies, the Stallone, the all that stuff, and wanted to be part of that.
But what I thought was interesting was you said, I want to be the bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to be the guy that's, you know, like saving everybody. You want to be the bad guy. Yeah. Why the bad guy?
Yeah, because the bad guy gets a cool death and stuff. So I think I just think it would be fun to be the bad guy. My stature, etc., would make that.
Would it also be fun, right? Because you are perceived as such a nice guy, to be like, oh, this is really cathartic to just be a bad guy, a jerk, an asshole.
I don't have that feeling where I'm looking to get anything out of it mentally, and like just release anything.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have that desire. It's really just to be the bad guy in an action movie and die right before the end of the movie.
I hope you get it. I hope you don't. Does the bad guy always? I hate action movies. Does the bad guy always die?
Yeah.
Okay.
reveals his plan and then gets...
And then gets killed. It's too bad because then he doesn't get to come back for the sequel.
I know. But, I don't know, I'll get to have, like, long hair on the camera.
And just, I'll wrap this up. What advice would you give somebody starting out in improv today? One thing.
There's a lot. But one thing that comes to mind is... try to be a nice person, because if in improv, if people like you, if people dig you as a person, you'll be invited to do shows with them, and then you'll learn that way. You'll be invited to go to a show with some person, and then you'll learn that way. You'll be invited to go to a party and hang out and meet people that you like and love, and you will grow and learn that way too. So then you know, as you move up in whatever community, whatever world you're in, continue to be nice. Don't become a jerk just because you get a little bit of a little bit of cred, a little bit of fame, etc. Because you could still, you know, it's because now other people are looking up to you as a person, as a performer, as a person, and don't taint that. Don't ruin everything just because you think you're a big shot.
I'm gonna need work on that one. Nnamdi Ungwe, thank you so much for being our guest, Improv Nerd.
And there you have it, another episode of Improv Nerd. And actually, this is unbelievable. This is the 90th. Episode of Improv Nerd. I want to thank our guests from IO Chicago. You can see them in Chaos Theory, Three-Pete and the Deltones, Nnamdi Ungwe. I also want to thank the good people here at Stage 773. It's our home base. These are the people that make us feel like rock stars. I also want to welcome our new producer, our interim producer, Dan Schiffmacher, for making me sound so slick and so professional. Also, if you figured this out, because you're smart people, you're improvisers, you're actors, you're stand-ups, you're people in the comedy business, we are on feralaudio.com. And we're not alone, because Feral Audio is a podcast collective. People like Chelsea Peretti, Steve Agee, Todd Berry, Dan Harmon, Matt Dwyer. The list goes on and on. Just go to feralaudio.com to check that out. If you want more information about me, Jimmy Corain, and my award-winning improv classes, The Art of Slow Comedy, and my Improv Nerd blog, which is going to give you tips to become a better improviser, just go to jimmycorain.com. And please like our Improv Nerd Facebook page. So just go to it and like it. It really helps with my low self-esteem. I want to thank our sponsor, the Hotel Lincoln, and I want to thank you for listening. And remember, oh, yeah, until next time, Jimmy's walk, don't nerd, run. He's a nerd. Oh, yeah. Jimmy's a nerd. He's a nerd.
Hello, I'm Kyle Ayers. I'm the host of Never Seen It, the podcast where comedians rewrite famous movies and TV shows they've never seen, and then we give them a read in studio. This is a clip I want to play for you guys from an episode where Langston Kerman rewrites Scarface. He's never seen it, but he wrote a script based on what he thinks he knows about it. And here's a clip. Give it a listen.
All right. Scarface, The New Frontier. Interior, happening discotheque. Remember when we called clubs discotheques? LOL. The 70s were crazy. Night. The crowd bustles with young, hot Mexicans who are supposed to be Cuban and all are dressed in butterfly collared shirts and pants that look like JNCO jeans and pleated khakis had a really weird baby. There's sex in the air and Poppy wants a whiff.
Oh my God.
Scarface, 22 to 45.
Like he's a television audience demographic.
Devilishly handsome, not even a little bit Italian looking, so get that out of your dumb brain. Walks through the crowd with the confidence of a man who's going on MTV Cribs with the Ying Yang Twins one day. Does he actually have a scar on his face? Fuck no. Why would you even ask that? That's not important. What's important is that he is not at all a problematic stereotype and that he has come for his cocaine. As he approaches the red rope of the VIP, pronounced ve a pay in Spanish,
oh my God.
He spots his dear friend, who is almost certainly going to become his enemy by the end of the film, Smooth Skin. Scarface yells out his signature line.
Ciao, Bella. It's me, Scarface.
Oh, my